bringing Gator Nation a different Gator great every episode.
This is Jabari Gaffney, and you're listening to the All for the Gators podcast.
Hey, I'm Earl Everett. You're not a Gator, you're Gator Bait.
This is Bo Carroll.
Hey, I'm Rita Anthony.
This is Kewan Ratliff, and you are listening to All for the Gators podcast.
This is Cetric Faison, a.k.a. C4.
This is Brandon James.
This is Jack Jackson. Go Gators.
Hi, this is your boy Jeremy Mincy, a.k.a. Mr. Mintz, and we were the All for the Gators podcast.
This is Ben Trooper. You listening to the All for the Gators podcast.
Hey, guys, this is Jarvis Moss. Go Gators.
You rocking with Leto Shepard, and we're All for the Gators podcast, man. Top notch.
This is Chris Doering, and you're listening to the All for the Gators podcast.
And now, your Gator alumni hosts, John, Andy, and Sid.
And look at this. Sid is rearing to go.
Always rearing to go. I look forward to this. Well, highlight of my week.
Not last week, you weren't.
Last week I wasn't looking forward to it.
No, you weren't rearing to go.
I guess I wasn't rearing. I'm rearing. I'm making up. This is back rearing.
You were swapping chairs, pulling cups.
It's true. I do have a busy desk. It's part of the process. It's a genius at work.
So the NFL Combine, is it over? It'll be over by the time this airs, right? Yeah.
Most likely, yes.
Ricky Pearsall had a fine performance.
That he did. Pretty impressive.
Andy, you haven't seen it, right?
Did he make a nice catch or something? I thought I saw a highlight of him making a catch.
Well, we know he's capable of that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm talking about the combine stuff. No. Like the 40. So you don't know what he ran?
I do not.
No. Hit us. What'd he get?
Take a guess.
Well, I know the record was broken, but it wasn't by him. That I did see. One guy broke the record for fastest time, and I thought, well, if Al Davis was still alive, you'd know where he'd go.
That's right.
To the Raiders, right. No, I thought Bo Jackson ran like a 4.1, or is that unofficial?
Unless it was for receivers. I don't think so. ESPN was talking about it. They were saying how he broke the record, and he ran it the second time. That's why they were re-showing it.
Xavier Worthy,
yeah,
Texas wide receiver, ran a 4.21.
Wow.
Yeah. Broke the record, who was held by John Ross. He went to the Bengals, right?
Yep.
Yeah. He was on a deep receiving core. He didn't really see the field a lot. I think he was like their fifth receiver.
He ran a 4.22 in 2017.
Wow.
So Pearsall ran. Did you do your guess, Andy?
No, I'm going to guess.
4.25.
It must have been.
Sid said 4.2.
It must have been good. I don't think he was that fast.
Okay.
I'm going to go 4.34.
Ooh.
4.41.
Very impressive.
Impressive, but not.
Not all time great.
I mean, there were like 15 guys that ran a 4.2 something.
Okay.
So.
You got to be able to catch.
We know he's got hands. It's not all about.
You
got
to be able to catch. We know he can do that.
He definitely is not afraid to go up and get it.
Check this out. What will impress teams even more is his change of direction, which he displayed by running 6.64 seconds in the three-cone drill, best amongst receivers.
Very nice.
How about that?
Yeah.
What's impressing me, though, tonight is John's attire.
Is it?
We have a big guest tonight.
We do.
For everybody.
Yeah.
And it's a first for our show.
It is.
Definitely, it's our first coach. And you guys can't see, obviously, on the podcast, but... He's going full coach tonight. He's got the visor and the collared shirt. So,
Button it up for the coaches, you know?
I like it. You look good.
Not like you scoundrels. Look at you. What are you wearing, pajamas? Come on.
Come on. It's a Gator shirt.
I'm kidding. Well.
It's a proper attire for tonight.
Yes.
Proper attire.
You did spoil the surprise, though.
Yeah, well.
Spoiled.
We talked about it last week.
Yeah, good point.
A re-spoil.
Yeah, I was going to say, should we have our own combine?
Okay, let's do it.
Like an All for the Gators podcast host combine. Are you ready?
Okay, let's do it.
You guys got a beer? Who's going to pound the beer the fastest?
I got a big water.
I would have if you would have prepped me for this.
That show prep I did not do.
Let's just get to the guest.
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, without further ado.
After doing the show for a while now and hearing from so many UF Hall of Famers, All-Americans, all-around Gator greats, a common theme became clear. The players loved this coach. Run through a wall, learned life lessons, just a couple things, fond things that the players have said on this show about this man. Hailing from Loudonville, Ohio, this man played ball at Miami of Ohio, and would get right into coaching shortly after graduation. By 1991, he made his way down to Gainesville, where he would coach DBs, special teams, and become associate head coach under Coach Spurrier. His leadership skills landed him in the NFL, but he came back to the swamp to take the reins after Coach Spurrier resigned right after 2001. For the next 3 years, he molded kids into men, won their adoration in the process, which was never more evident than when he was hoisted upon their shoulders and carried off the field when no championship was won, just giving him the proper farewell his players thought he deserved. He'd go on to coach the Fighting Illini for 7 years, winning Big Ten Coach of the Year in 2007. Gator Nation, I present to you one of the most impactful recruiters, coaches, leaders in the history of the Orange and Blue. Just ask the players. Mr. Ronald Andrew Zuck, Coach Zuck.
All right. Welcome, Coach.
Well, thanks, guys. That's better than the last time they all talked about me. But no, thank you. Glad to be here. And obviously, I've got a lot of fond memories of Gainesville. I actually was able to be there 8 years, five with Coach Spurrier, and obviously three myself. But Gainesville, and I live about an hour south of Gainesville now, southeast of Ocala. I live on a lake down there. So I'm close to Gainesville. But it was, if you'd ask my daughters, they would probably say, we moved around so much, but they would probably say that they grew up in Gainesville. So anyway, there's a lot of great memories there.
Well, thank you for taking the time for us today. One thing we've learned doing the show, like I said, so many Gator greats that we've had on have the utmost respect for you and affection towards you as their recruiter, coach, and even mentor in life. So much so that, I mean, I've been bugging you for a while now to get you on because we just had to talk to you. So it's a big one for us today. Appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it. I really didn't know what I was getting into or what to expect. And as I said, there's you know, right now, you know, college football and the NFL, and you know, there's so many things out there. You know, I'm a little bit careful and, you know, where I put myself. But as I said, I have a lot of fond memories of Gainesville. I really do. And I've said this. I said it at the Gator Club I spoke to at the beginning of the season. I still believe in my heart that the University of Florida is the best college football job in America. I believe it. And you know, obviously, it's not going the way everybody wants it to go right now. But just if you give him a chance, he'll get it where it needs to be. And, you know, they'll be back to where they're supposed to be.
Well, Coach, before we dig into your career, I've got to ask you a little bit about the NIL. We saw Saban leave Bama, express his opinions on the way out. As someone who spent, you know, their entire career in the trenches recruiting and coaching like you have, how does that impact the coach? And do you think we're going to see a higher percentage of coaches maybe taking NFL opportunities now versus college?
Well, you know, one thing, NFL is hard to get into. I mean, it's hard to get into the NFL. But I think what's happened, obviously the coaches are going to have to adjust, and what it's done to the game. It's not what I grew up with. It's not what the game taught me, it's going to be hard to put the toothpaste back in the tube. But I really believe that somehow something's going to have to be done. I said this 20 years ago. I think maybe the last convention that I went to, I said, coaches, guys, listen to me. We better do something or football is going to turn into basketball. You know, the 1 year, one and done. And I think when you have that, it's hard to develop a team. It's hard to get a team that where everybody's pulling for the same thing. And, you know, I think you lose. I think the fans, it hurts the fans. You know, these fans, the Gator fans, they grew up watching these guys for 3 or 4 years. And then, bam, they're going in 1 year or they're upset about something. And then, you know, the more negative that's out there, it hurts the team. It hurts the coaches. It hurts the recruiting. Now I'm not so sure. You know, you don't hear about academics anymore. You know, all you hear about is, you know, how much money they can get.
How much money?
Yeah, I think it's probably a something they got to look at when you got a lot of college players that are making probably more than the starting quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers did this year.
Yeah.
And I'm glad for the players. I want the players to get money. But there has to be some kind of, at least in the NFL, you at least have a, you know, everybody's on a level playing field. And you know, they have a certain amount of money that they spend, and then it's up to that team to decide, you know, how much these people get. And that's why and that's the whole reason for the salary cap in the NFL is they want it to be competitive. They want the teams to be as close as they possibly can be. But I think in college, the haves and the have-nots, the separation's probably going to grow. And as I said, what are we doing to these players? And not all of them, but a lot of them are making a pretty good amount of money. And the percentage of them getting in the NFL is not going to go up. It's just because they're making money. That doesn't mean they're going to get in the NFL. So now they're out of college. They're 22 years old. They're used to living on a $100,000 or $200,000 or $300,000 salary, or maybe more than that. And It's hard to find a job out there unless they're playing in the National Football League where you're making that kind of money. So now, you know, they may be broke. And I know about 12, 15 years ago, there was a big push in, with the NFL in trying to educate the guys, you know, because I think at that time the average lifespan in the NFL was four and a half years, something like that. And these guys were, you know, 30, 32, 35 years old, and they were broke. And after making a pretty substantial amount of money, and you know, they were blaming the NFL for, you know, not educating and helping these players. So all the programs and so forth that the NFL installed to try to help players, but now you're going to have 18-year-olds and 22-year-olds and 20-year-olds in the same dilemma. And I think if we're not careful, the great thing that football has done for America, it's going to change. Obviously, it has changed, but I think it's important that we revisit, you know what the game is all about and why it's such a popular game and why it is the best, you know I mean, it's maybe the best team game that there is, at least that I know of. And it's of course I've spent 45 years in it, so I thought I'd seen a lot. I've seen it all, but so it's still changing.
Let's take it back to when college football was the college football that we knew and loved. You were co-captain of your Miami of Ohio team, playing DB. Did you have aspirations of going right into coaching after you graduated college?
No, I went to college to be a dentist.
Okay.
And I had no intentions of coaching. But I had a tryout with the Broncos, and when I got cut, I'm coming back. And my advisor had told me, Dr. Griffith, I remember him, and he was making me take his education courses. And I said, Dr. Griffith, I don't want to take this stuff. He said, just shut up and take them. So I did. So when I was done playing, I thought, you know, I'm really not ready to give up this game. I'd like to get into coaching. I was fortunate enough to play with a great group. In fact, we played Florida in the Tangerine Bowl, in the 73 Tangerine Bowl. And at Florida Field, I lost one game as a starter in college, and you think, boy, this is kind of easy, this is kind of fun. And then, you know, I got into coaching. I taught biology and chemistry at Orville High School, where Bobby Knight was from, and we tied one game. So in 5 years of football, I had lost one game and tied one game. And I thought, man, this is kind of a cool profession. I think I'd like to, you know, try the college level. So I went as a graduate assistant to Murray State University, and Murray, I didn't even know where Murray was.
Yeah.
And even though I was a graduate.
I don't. Where is it?
It's in the southwest corner of Kentucky.
Okay.
About an hour from where the Ohio runs into the Mississippi. But anyway, the guy that I worked for, the head coach I worked for, very, very successful high school coach. It's up around Maslin, Akron, Kent, about probably 30 minutes from the Hall of Fame. And he said, you're not going to be a good coach until you lose. And I said, well, I don't really want to be a good coach yet. Because losing is just, I didn't get it. But anyway, I was fortunate enough to, the guy, Mike Godfrey, who was from Crestline, Ohio, and actually his high school that he went to, he's old, much older, but was in the same conference as the high school that I went. And I was a graduate assistant, I had my own position, my own recruiting. So I was able to get into it early. And I was there for 3 years. And we went to the University of Cincinnati, and, you know, he made me a defensive coordinator probably before I was ready. But that's the best way to get ready is being under the gun. And I can remember my first two games were against Penn State and Pittsburgh. That's when they were number one and number two in the nation. And Todd Blackledge and Dan Marino were the quarterbacks.
Yikes.
It was Dan Marino's junior year. Penn State threw 52 on us. Jeez. And so my first game as a defensive coordinator was not, and then Dan Marino, he threw 38 on us. But we went on to play pretty good defense, ended up, I think, sixth or seventh in the nation. And it's funny because Coach Paterno and I had become pretty close friends. I was really close to him on his Nike trips. We'd sit around, people would be out playing golf, and we'd be talking. You'd get him to tell me stories, and the stories of the players and the people that, you know, what he had done for the game. And then when I was at Illinois, we'd be in a Big Ten in the head coaches meetings, and I'd always be bumping him under the table to speak up, because, I mean, when he spoke, people listened.
Mm-hmm. Everybody listened.
But anyway, that's kind of how I got into it. And kind of went from there. I was just fortunate enough to be around a lot of great people, a lot of great players. I learned also early that, you know, in fact, when I was at the University of Tennessee, a guy that was Bear Bryant's defensive coordinator for 21 years, he used to always say, "Ron, it's better to be known as a bad coach with good players than a good coach with bad players." it's kind of funny. I listen, you know, there's so many, I'm kind of away from it a little bit in terms of a lot of young coaches, but you listen to some of these coaches talk and they think it's about the coaches. Let me tell you, it ain't about the coaches. It's about the players. And all you got to do is you know, the players, it's a player's game. They're the ones that are going to decide. Now, as a coach, you've got to get them on the right track, and you've got to try to develop a team and all those things, and obviously have the systems. But it doesn't matter. It's the players. And I mean, all you got to do is look at, you know, look at the NFL now. I mean, the teams that have quarterbacks, they got a chance to win it. Mm-hmm. The teams that don't, they're not. You know, injuries and all those things that you have no control over, but it's about the players. And anybody, any coach that in my opinion, that thinks it's about, you know, I've been around them guys that you give them a box of chalk and they turn it to dust. but if they don't have the right players, it's going to be hard for them to win.
Well, you get to coach a lot of players, getting DC roles in a bunch of places, Kansas, Tennessee, Virginia Tech, Ohio State. Before you arrived back in Gainesville at UF in 91, Ohio State's just as big a program as Florida and from your hometown state. How did you wind up in Gainesville? Did you have a prior relationship with Coach Spurrier?
No, I really didn't. Carl Franks, at that time they were at Duke, but I never recruited with a lot of coaches. I wanted to do my own deal, and I didn't, I wasn't a guy that hung out at the bars. And I mean, I was at night, I was working it and doing the things that you got to do. And Carl was the same way. And so I wanted to live in Florida. Being from Ohio, I don't like cold weather. In fact, I'm in Ohio right now. So what I used to do on spring breaks, my mom and dad lived in down around West Palm. And my wife and my daughters, they'd go down there for spring break, and I would go to Florida State, Florida, and Miami. It was, you know, just to get to know the coaches, and you know, kind of, you know, it's like what coaches do. You kind of go and learn things that the other people are doing. And I was just fortunate enough that there was an opening, and Carl helped me get in on it. And it really, a mutual friend that knew Coach Spurrier real well, Jim McVay, who was the director of he's a director of what's now, it used to be the Outback Bowl. I'm not even sure what it's called now. But he knew Coach Spurrier, and so it worked out. And so I got to Florida, and I was there for 5 years.
You talked about recruiting, so let's talk a little bit about Coach Zook the recruiter. Like John said in the intro, pretty much every guest that we've had on that's been recruited by you, let us know how much they appreciate your relationships. Even saying you still, to this day, talk to some of their parents. what went into your recruiting strategy? What made you such an effective recruiter?
Well, first of all, it's not a strategy. Football is a people game. It's a people person. And you know, I was fortunate enough to have a good product to sell. Every place has got something to sell. You sell that. But it still comes down to people. And, you know, I don't care where you go. There's going to be tough days. There's going to be problems. Just at Florida, there were a lot of players at Florida that, truth be known, Coach Spurrier really didn't want. Hmm. I just hung around. And Terry Jackson, Mike Peterson, I took them in my position because I knew they were or felt like they were going to be good football players. And I said, look, I'll take him at my position. And that, you know, you're going to have so many receivers, so many running backs. Ike was we recruited Ike as a DB. Yeah. Bobby Sanders recruited Ike Hilliard out of Louisiana. And he came as, you know, Coach, I didn't really know if he liked him. And you know, I said, Bobby, I like him. I like him a lot. And he got to, you know, which, you know, that's perfectly what the head coach is going to allow to do. And, of course, Ike turned out to be a heck of a football player. And, I mean, there's you know, a bunch of them that just that's kind of the way it happens. But, you know, you got to be there to help them. You know, it's like when I got fired after the Mississippi State game. Everybody that I knew in coaching told me not to finish the year. Don't do it. You can't do it. You don't want to do it. And I said, well, you know what? And all these recruiting for however long I've been recruiting, I always say I'm going to be there in tough times. Well, if I quit because it's a tough time, then I'm not, you know, I'm being too, you know, so, I mean, it was as hard as it was, and it was hard, holy smokes, but it was still, I would do it again. It was, I thought, important that hey, because the players, no one likes change, and mm-hmm. They didn't come there because of change, and so, you know, I felt like I had to do it just because that's what I've been preached. And it's funny because my first year at Illinois, we're playing Penn State, and as I said, Coach Paterno and I have become pretty good friends, and we're standing there, you know, coaches talk before the game, and he's out there, and I said, Coach, I said, I bet you're glad I got fired. He kind of looked at us, you know, what are you talking about? And I said, well, them five freshmen that are all going to play against me today, they were all going to Florida. And they were. I think recruiting is, once again, it's those 11 or 12 or 13 days, they're easy. It's them other 350, 51, 52 days that are hard. And you know, you got to be there for them. And, you know, and yeah, it's tough love. You know, sometimes they say, well, you're a players coach. I was as hard on players as anybody and demanding. But I did it in a way where, you know, they knew I cared about them. And I think that's what's important. And you know, it kind of gets hard sometimes. And, but you know, it's a tough way to go. And that's what, like with the portal that's going on now, I don't know that I've ever been around a freshman that into that first semester didn't want to quit or didn't want to go home. I mean, it's just, you know, they've never worked that hard. They've never been held their note to the grinds. Every day's, you know, Groundhog Day, the school, the football, the pressure of academics. Mm-hmm. So they all want to leave. Well, now they can. C4, Seattle, face it. I'm sure you guys have probably talked mm-hmm. to C4.
Yep, we have.
We're getting ready to play LSU his sophomore year. And he comes in my office and he's going to quit. And I just kind of real nonchalantly, I got up and I closed the door and I looked at him. And I said, well, then one of us is not going to walk out of here. And, you know, C4 is such a great kid. I mean, I love him to death. And he kind of looked at me because he wasn't sure if I was serious or not. I was even like a hard dog. But he goes, so that week we play LSU, he goes and, you know, rambles off 186 yards against LSU. That was the year they won the national championship. So, you know, it's you got to be there. You got to be able to help guys through the tough times. And sometimes what happens is coaches get so wrapped up in their next job or what it looks like, or as I said, it's still about the players. It's about the players, and if you don't have good players, I don't care who you are, you're not going to be successful.
Staying on recruiting, I got a two-pronged question for you. Who was one guy that we would know for Florida that you recruited that you really thought you had in the bag, but he didn't come to UF? And then on the other hand, is there a guy that you really thought, well, I got no chance he's coming to UF, and you got him to flip and become a Gator?
Well, let me say this. I never lost a mama. You know, I learned that from Coach Bowden. You know, I mean, I knew how Coach Bowden recruited. And when I first went to Florida in 91, I had to Jacksonville, and of course, Alachua County, all that, Marion County. So, I was going against Jim Gladden, who's been a great recruiter, and Brad Scott, Coach Bowden. First thing I did is I learned how they recruited, because I was not going to get, you know, I mean, I'd go sit on the floor with them, and just like Coach Bowden used to do. And as I said, I can't tell you the number of mothers that have said, you know, we really want him to come there, but it's his decision. And so I don't think I ever lost a mother, but I did lose some players. And, you know, that's going to happen. There's a couple kids that I can't remember. Who was the defensive back's name at Florida State? He was coming to
Butler.
Florida. Who?
Leroy Butler.
No. That was back. Leroy, I was at Tennessee when Leroy came out. But anyway, he was coming, and then he wasn't. And that stuff happens. I mean, you know, I'm at the University of Cincinnati, and I'm recruiting this kid out of Raines High School in Jacksonville. And this would have been like, what, 81, 82. And the kid was coming to Cincinnati. And I waited out, you know, he never came home the night before National Letter. And I sat out in front of his house all night long. And he never came home. So I go to the school because they're going to sign at 8 o'clock in the morning. And I said, I'm not leaving until he tells me he doesn't want to come to the University of Cincinnati. And they called the police on me. Raines High School. Freddie Stevens was the head coach. We've talked about it since. Great guy. But I said, I'm not leaving until he tells me he doesn't want to come to Cincinnati. And it ended up going to another school for whatever reason. But there's a lot about it. Now it's just who's got the biggest checkbook. Now it's just what it comes down to. But if you think about that, the one kid I thought we had that ended up going to Florida State, big, tall defensive back, corner, played in the league for a long time. He's got about 12 kids now. I mean, he's
Cromartie.
Cromartie.
Antonio Cromartie.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay. I thought we had him. And
the kids gave it away.
Again, we didn't. So, something happened. But now, as I said, everybody recruits with a checkbook. Is that really what we want? I mean, it's what we got, but is it what we want? So, and I've said this in the last, I've done some interviews and so forth. And to me, it's not going to happen. But I read a thing in the state of Florida, and I'm sure it's happening all over the states, where they're talking about having the NIL deals for high schools.
Oh my God!
So, in the state of Florida, that means if now everybody's, of course, they have open enrollment now, but if a kid, he's an eighth grader and, people are going to start paying him to come to their school. And
it's a kid.
I mean, guys, it's somewhere we got to take a look at this, I think.
Then the parents are going to get more involved because the kid's going to be a minor and they're going to want the money.
Well, they're already involved. Trust me. they're already involved.
So you spend 3 years as DC under Spurrier, but in 94, he gives you the special teams unit. Then you almost leave us to go up to Michigan State as the defensive coordinator there, but coach then tags you as the associate head coach title to keep you stick around a little longer. So what was your relationship like with the old ball coach at this time, and how did being the associate head coach prepare you for when you were running your own team not too far after?
Well, I don't know that had a lot to do with, Coach Burr was a boss and everything. Everybody knew it. And it, like I said, it goes back. The 91 team, my first year at Florida, I mean, you talk about a defense now. If you remember, probably one of the at least top five games that I've ever been involved with was the 91 Florida State game in the Swamp. It was November the 30th, 1991, and we won 14-9. And it was, I don't know how many NFL players were on that field that day, but there were a bunch. and our whole defense went to the NFL just about. And Florida State, we were up 14-9. The game's over. Coach Spurrier, he's got to score more points. And so Shane goes down and throws a pick on the, in the red zone inside the 10-yard line. So now, both teams, players are throwing up. It was a hot day. It was a great, unbelievable game. But anyway, so they get down. They drive the length of the field. It's 4th-and-7, last play of the game, 4th-and-7. And Coach Spurrier comes running down and says, what do you want to do? And I just kind of look at him and said, what do you want to do? First of all, we shouldn't have ever been in that situation. And where I'm from in Ohio, you're just trying to win the game. You don't care about stats. You win. Winning is takes care of everything else. But then in 92 and in 93, we're playing all freshmen. Bobby Bowden said this my first year as a head coach at Florida, and that's when I knew I was in trouble. And he said that for every freshman you start, you're going to lose 5 games. And I told my wife, I said, damn, we might as well not even have a season. If you go back and you look at my first 2 years at Florida, how many young kids we played. And that's why you're going to be a better player as a junior and senior than you are as a freshman. So I don't, that's just the way it is. Well, in 92 and 93, we took our lumps. We played all them young kids. We lost some games we shouldn't have lost, but we did all the. And then in 94, that team had kind of come around. Mm-hmm. And of course, he played pretty well in 95. But he made the change, and that was, you know. But I wanted to live in Florida. That was, you know, I had chances to leave, and he said that, you know, Nick tried to hire me. You know, who knows? But I thought it was important that I, you know, once again, I love living in Florida, and I'd recruited a bunch of the players. The 96 national championship team, the majority of those guys I recruited, and mm-hmm. particularly the defensive guys.
Yep.
And like I said, it's just easier to be a good coach when you get good players. And you know, it doesn't matter what you're doing. I think the one thing, if you're an offensive head coach, obviously you're going to make decisions during the game for the offense. And I think most of the time defensive coaches are going to make decisions to win games. And I don't mean that derogatorily towards Coach Spurrier. I'm just, you know, there's a lot of times that you know, you don't have to take chances. You go back to the Detroit game in the playoffs this year. I mean,
yep.
That fourth down, that you know, he wished he had that call back. Well, you don't get it back. But he's the head coach. He made the call. And at that particular time, I know that making that fourth down call helped a majority of the year. But it is so – no, people don't know how hard it is to get to the Super Bowl. I mean, it's so hard. And now you're in a position. Maybe you have to change your philosophy a little bit, and I don't care what the analytics say, and go with your gut a little bit. But anyway, I stayed there for that reason. Now, when Coach Spurrier made me the coordinator again after the '95 season, after that beatdown in Nebraska, that's when I left for the NFL. I said, "Well, I'm back where I was." And I'm not going to let him do it to me again. And I knew they had a good team coming back, but that was something that I never had intentions of going to the NFL. Really didn't want to go to the NFL. In fact, I flew up to Pittsburgh, and Coach Cowher wanted me to stay overnight. And I said no. It was, you know, I get to Pittsburgh, and you know, it's one of those days. It's about 35 degrees, and it's raining, and I'm living in Florida, and you want me to live in Pittsburgh? Come on. And so anyway. I knew he wanted to make a decision quick because he wanted to go to the get to the combine. So I said, "Coach, give me till 11 o'clock in the morning." And so I go back home and he calls me, and I said, "Well, Coach, I know you want to make a decision early." I says, "Just, you know, probably you need to probably go on and go a different direction." And so he talked to me for about 45 minutes, and when I hung up, I knew I had to go to the Steelers, but I didn't know how I was going to talk myself into it. And not to mention my wife and two daughters. So anyway, it was a great situation for me, and obviously NFL is the experience I had in the NFL was Pittsburgh is a. I was fortunate enough to be able to coach at three of the top organizations in the NFL: the Steelers, the Chiefs, and the Green Bay Packers. And then I learned a lot in New Orleans because I was a defensive coordinator. So it was an unbelievable experience there too.
We had Ernie Mills on the show last week. He was in Pittsburgh, I think, at the same time. Did you end up coaching Ernie there when you were in Pittsburgh?
He wasn't there when I was there. But the one thing that Coach Cowher was a defensive coach, but he had also coached special teams at Kansas City. So okay. He knew kind of the problems that special teams can go through. It was my first year. We're playing the last game, the last year that the Houston Oilers are in Houston. The year before they go to Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Well, our punter had gotten hurt, so I talked him into bringing Shane Edge. And guys, Shane, if you have an Edge on you, you need to have Shane on there. Him and Judd, two knuckleheads, but they are great.
Oh, yeah.
Great. They got away with more crap than anybody. But anyway, so I bring Shane in to punt.
Right.
And because I knew Shane, and I knew he could do what we needed to do. And so we're in the heat of the battle, and I go down to Coach Kyle, and I said, "Coach, what about taking a safety?" And I don't remember what the score was. And Coach says, "Yeah, great idea." And so we go in there, and Shane to take a safety, and Shane dances around. He steps out of bounds, and Chris Dishman, a DB for Houston, right, who I ended up coaching in Kansas City, anyway, pushes him. Well, Shane pushes him back. They get in a fight, they get thrown out of the game. Both of them. So now I've made a suggestion to take a safety, and my punter, who I brought in, it's thrown out of the game. So and you can't use a tee. Now we got a kickoff, and somebody's got to hold the ball because you can't use a tee on a kickoff after a safety. And I'm thinking, man, I'm going to get fired. And they're saying, well, you know, Shane's not going to make any money. He's going to get, you know, his fine's going to be more than he's going to make it. The heck with Shane? What about me? But anyway, we laugh about that. But it was a funny deal. But anyway, going back, I kind of rambled on there. But the NFL was a great experience. It is. It still comes down to players. You know, coaching players. And, you know, I enjoyed both college and the NFL. And I was in the XFL last year. Shoot, I was a defense coordinator. We had a great time.
In Seattle, right?
With the Seattle franchise. And right. And we had the same Jim Hazlitt was the head coach. The same guy was the head coach in New Orleans when I was there. And Randy mm-hmm. Mueller was our GM, just like GM. New Orleans. So we ran it just like the NFL. But it was a good deal. But when they, once again, it comes back to money. And Seattle's a long way out there when you start busting teams out there or flying teams out there.
So there's no Seattle team in this new combined?
Not this year. They took four from each league. They're actually I'd be practicing right now. They started, I think, they're probably in their fifth or sixth day of practice. Now they say they're going to bring us back. They said we were going to have a team this year, but it didn't work out that way. So anyway, that's the game.
All right, let's talk about after 2001's Orange Bowl. Spurrier resigns to go to try his hand in the NFL. We know AD then, Jeremy Foley, was looking at. He had Mike Shanahan, former Gator coach, on his radar. He was in Denver. He had Bob Stoops on his radar. He was in Oklahoma, and those guys decided to stay put. How did you get in the mix, and what was the process to get you to take the head coach job there?
Well, I remember we were getting ready to play the 49ers, and it must have been a Friday because we were on third down, and it was third down, short yardage and goal line practicing. One of the guys comes out and said, hey, your boy just resigned. I said, what are you talking about? That's good. Coach Spurrier, get out of here. So anyway, Foley called me, and you know, I had known, obviously, I was here in 91 before, and I think it was 92 when Jeremy actually, Coach Orangebarger was the AD that hired Spurrier, and Jeremy was the associate AD or whatever, and then he took over, I think, in 92. So, I mean, I was here with Jeremy in that period of time, and so... You know, they came to New Orleans to interview me, and you know, I mean, I knew better than to take the job after Steve Spurrier. But what are you going to do? Say no? I'll take it the next time. Now, what I didn't know is the shape that the team was in, and I didn't know, and I'm not, you know, we weren't as loaded with players as they were when I left, and. So anyway, Dr. Young, who was the president, and, you know, that's what I was kind of joking with you earlier. You know, they started that fireronzip.com before I landed in Gainesville.
Wow.
And you know, it's hard. When you have that much negative, my wife used to pay everything in cash because she didn't want to show them a credit card. She didn't want anybody to know her name.
Oh, man.
It was hardball there. But, you know, we kept going. And, you know, we hit recruiting hard. But anyway, the day after I got the job, Dr. Young, who was the interim president, he had been the president at UCLA when John Wooden, Gene Bartow took over from John Wooden. So he was trying to tell me what was going to happen. And I said, well, you know, Dr. Young, what do you suggest? He says, Ron, don't change. He says, because there's nothing you can do. Just don't change. And I'll tell you a little interesting fact that people don't know. Gene Bartow had a higher winning percentage than John Wooden at UCLA.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean,
interesting.
It's all relative. But you know, once again, and then, you know, people start talking and they don't really know what they're talking about. And then the next person just repeats the same thing that they hear. And, you know, if you go back to the 3 year plus, we got Miami on the schedule the first 2 years. The first year, they're number one in the nation.
Right out of the gate.
Second year, we got them to number two in there. And really, we had a chance to win the second year. But I, in fact, the, the first pro day, Jim Hazard, as I said, was the head coach at New Orleans. I just left, and they were down at Miami's pro day. And he calls me, and we're out practicing, and not practice, but the kids are working out in the swamp. And he says, man, you're going to get murdered. You have no chance against his team. He was just watching Miami's pro day. They had 6 first-round draft choices from West Palm Beach South. Yep. And I told our coaches, you know, we're going to the bottom, boys, because that, you know, we got it. And we really put a dent in the recruiting. Red Anderson did a great job down there. He was from down there and did a great job recruiting down there. But we started plucking a few of those guys out of there from the bottom. But anyway, it was tough sledding there. It was the whole time, but we made progress. We kept going. My biggest recruit the first year was Rex Grossman, keeping Rex here because Rex was leaving, I mean, he was my biggest recruit, and Rex is a great guy. He is a great, great guy. We had Ernest Graham. Ernest Graham was a great player, Todd Johnson, Daryl Dixon.
Taylor Jacobs.
Gus Scott was there. Taylor Jacobs. Mm-hmm. Keyron Ratliff. Keyron played at least – he was there. I think Keyron's a good – he's an Ohio player. He's from – Bobby Scoops had recruited him. But a good player out of Ohio. But you know, we got Rex to stay, that was a recruiting pitch to get him. That was, as I said, because he kind of knew the lay of the land, and he kind of knew what was coming back, and he knew what was coming, what was ahead on the schedule. But it was a good deal, and it worked out for me. You know, I tell a little story that probably the one team, while both Mississippi teams seem to always cause Coach Spurrier and myself issues. But we're playing, getting ready to play Ole Miss the first year, and we're staying in Memphis, and I can tell something's wrong with Rex. He's in the jar, and he's sitting beside me on the bus because we had stayed in Memphis going down to Ole Miss. And I said, "What the heck's wrong with you?" And come to find out, his girlfriend, who's now his wife, and him, and she had broke up with him. Oh. And Rex, you know, now Rex was the coolest guy. I mean, he had more women than he got to beat him off. You know, he just she had broken up with him, and he was a mess. And I'm thinking, my gosh, here we are. And he actually threw 2 picks at me. And really, we still got the game stolen from us, in my opinion. I mean, we had a lineman downfield call, a touchdown call back. But anyway, so I'm doing an interview in Chicago when I'm the head coach of Illinois, and Rex is playing for the Bears. And we're in downtown Chicago, and we're in this TV studio down there, and his wife's down there with him. And I go up to her, and I said, you know, I really don't like you. And she kind of looked at me. And I was killed. Of course, I was kidding. I said, you cost me a game. You had Rex so screwed up. But anyway, it was a fun one. Going back to which, you know, as I said, what are you going to do? Tell Jim, I knew it's not the right thing to do, but what are you going to do? Tell him no, an opportunity to coach. I'm saying now, it's the best job in college football. And obviously they have a lot more things going right now. They got facilities. When I was there, we were probably, you can ask anybody that was there. If you talk about facilities, we were probably 8th or 9th in the SEC. In facilities, but you know, I can remember talking to Jeremy about, you know, an indoor, and how we don't need an indoor. This is Florida. Well, I can't tell you how many times, because you know all the thunderstorms come up. Yeah. Well, we're practicing over there in the parking garage. You know, I mean, and then you got to wait 20 minutes or 30 minutes after a lightning strike. And so, no, it's still the things that it has to offer. Obviously, academics is unbelievable. And so it's a great school, but you know, you do the best you can, and that's all you can do. And I said, we brought a bunch of really good players in there that I'm sure have fond memories of the University of Florida.
Was there something specific that you remember that you said to Rex to finally get him to make the decision to stay?
I don't know whether it was one thing in specific. I was relentless, though. Okay. I knew we had to have a quarterback.
Yeah.
Obviously the next year we ended up, you know, after the 4th game, after the Tennessee game, playing a true freshman. So, and that doesn't mean, I mean, I think for our offense, and it doesn't, you know, for what we were doing offensively, we didn't have another quarterback that, that I felt, you know, they could go on and, what was his name? Who was our backup quarterback? Anyway, he went on and actually played in the league for a year. So, but it didn't fit our offense and what we were trying to do. He transferred to Furman and had a, you know, had a good rest of his year. But then we ended up playing Chris, after the fourth game, the Tennessee game, Chris Leak, is our starting quarterback. And Chris was he was the number one recruit in the country that year. And, great kid, and, you know, really a good player too.
All right, that was Coach Zook talking about what weapons he still had on offense. And who his number one recruit was, Rex Grossman, to come back and stay for his senior year after the biggest Heisman snub in the history of the Heisman. I'm John Spano, lead host and producer of the All for the Gators podcast. Look out for part two of our conversation with Coach Zook to drop next Monday, March 18th. Until then, go Gators.